You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Yet again, Central Valley hospitals are overflowing with COVID-19 patients, which has stretched our medical systems thin and created disturbing consequences for anyone in need of critical care. To learn more about how hospitals are coping with the most recent surge, I spoke with Donna Heffner, President and CEO of Sierra View Medical Center in Porterville, Dr. Danielle Campaign, Medical Director of American Ambulance, Dr. Robert Ferdman, Assistant Chief of Hospital Medicine at Kaiser Permanente Fresno Medical Center, and Dr. Kenny Bond, Director of the UCSF Fresno COVID Equity Project. So first of all, I just want to thank all of you for taking the time to talk with us today. You know, but I have to say, it is really discouraging that we're still talking about the toll that COVID's taking on our medical systems. And I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for all of you who have been on the front lines of this pandemic for the past year and a half. Donna Heffner, I want to start with you. You know, as the CEO of Sierra View Medical Center, I understand it's been a really difficult past several weeks. And I'm wondering if you could just give us a sense of what this surge has been like for your hospital and how it has differed from previous spikes in COVID hospitalizations.
Yes, thank you very much. In regards to this pandemic, we actually identified the first patient in Tulare County back in March of last year. And from that moment, it really became very vivid in regards to what we needed to do as far as responding to ensure the safety of our staff. But when we hit about April of this year, we started to plateau here. At that time, around April 30th, we'd already seen hospitalized 1,229 patients with COVID. And so the next couple months were us catching our breath and starting to really kind of touch, check in with staff in regards to how are they feeling, you know, coming out of this surge that we've experienced through the winter months. And we were starting to turn that corner about July. And I remember July 5th, coming out of the 4th of July holiday, is that we'd already identified 10 cases in Tulare County with the Delta variant. And as a result of that, you know, the next 30 days, we started to see the rise of hospitalizations. And, you know, it was on August 9th that surge began, and we became in a critical state as far as being able to staff our licensed beds. So, you know, this became a staffing issue and has been for the last 30 days for us. And it kind of goes back to what we were seeing with just the turnover of staff last year. It was significantly higher than we'd seen in previous years. And based on our benchmarking in California for our turnover, we were definitely higher than that. We were at 16%. But January to this to August this year, we've had 17% of our RN workforce leave to go travel. And so that also created an increased pressure on us in a rural area, not only to care for those with COVID symptoms, because what we did as a result of the increased surge in August with patients needing COVID, we went back to the same systems that worked for us last year, in that we isolated one entire unit and all of our staff were in all the right PPE and all of our patients were in the unit with the right filtration systems and all of those things that worked. But the volume of patients presenting to the ED was a mixture now. It was not all those coming with COVID-like symptoms. There were a lot of patients that had presented with non-COVID-like symptoms that were in need of emergent care. And that volume alone for our 18-bed facility, we were seeing upwards as high as I've seen 59 individuals in the department seeking care. So it has been definitely challenging this time in regards to the staff we've been able to bring in from travelers. You know, prior to, one of our goals in this organization was to retain our staff, and we realized that 56% of our staff We have 1,016 employees. We're less than 5 years. So we've had a goal for ourselves to try to increase that retention level. And so, but with this turnover, we haven't been able to make strides around that. That also causes us to have to bring in additional staff to help backfill, and that comes in the form of hiring agency staff. And so we have had 19 travelers in at this time helping us with that. We have a number of our employees that are out on a leave of absence caring for themselves or for their children. And that also presents some challenges because we can have we have over 100 employees out on a leave of absence of our 1,000 employees. So those are all some of the challenges. On a positive note, we have been the site of Tulare County that we are administering the monoclonal antibodies. So we average about 3 to 4 patients every day that come in with COVID-like symptoms, and one of our registered nurses spends about 2 to 4 hours with those patients and gets the administration of the Regeneron, and that's made some strides. We've had a great increase in acceptance of vaccines recently, and so that's all been very encouraging. But to date, we have treated over 1,634 COVID patients hospitalized, and we are, just in the last couple days, have seen our numbers starting to decline a little bit, and that's encouraging.
That has to be welcome news. Mm-hmm. Dr. Ferdman, you know, you've been on the ground dealing with this throughout the pandemic, and I'm just wondering if you could give us a sense of what it is like to be now dealing with this new wave of COVID patients, given that many of these severe cases could have been prevented with a vaccine.
Absolutely. So since the end of June and even into now, our numbers rapidly increased from into July and into August. And we were definitely a little bit more prepared this time around compared to previous years in terms of, you know, PPE equipment, respirators and things like that. The things that we've seen, as many other facilities have seen, is that the diversity of the population of people that have come in now with this COVID infection from previously last year, we were seeing more older people, people with a variety of different comorbidities. But this year, at least in our hospital, we're seeing more patients that are younger, in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, some people without any significant comorbidities. So it's a significant impact on a variety of different ages, different populations. And of course, it's affecting our unvaccinated people the most. Those are the people that are coming into the hospital, staying in the hospital longer, leading to more burdens and more workflow into the hospital flow. And at the same time, a lot of these people are being requiring higher levels of care, impacting our ICUs and staying in the ICUs longer. So a lot of the patients that we've seen here at the hospital as well, prior to last year, we were able to use the medications we had and turn them around pretty quickly, you know, over just maybe a couple of days of the treatments from the treatments that we have. But with this new variant, patients are staying longer. Patients are sicker. Patients are much, much more compromised in various organs. So in our impact into the hospital, initially we saw great impact on the hospital floor. But now we're seeing more and more patients requiring higher levels of care. Our ICUs are beyond capacity. Stretching our physicians, our nursing staff, but our nursing staff and everyone's in, you know, good spirits in terms of trying to help these patients, being in contact with families and doing what's best for our patients. But even then, so our ICU is beyond capacity, beyond impact, and these patients are staying in the hospital, especially those in the ICU are staying. Much, much longer, weeks and weeks on impact. What we're seeing right now is that, you know, fortunately, whether or not we're turning over the hump is kind of what we're seeing right now, where the hospital is not as much impacted as it was. However, we still have several COVID that are still in the hospital, still very, very sick. And with that being said, the ICUs are being more impacted, and What it's ended up doing is for a lot of patients that are needing the resources, needing hospital care for various other non-COVID emergencies are being impacted as well, both in the hospital setting as well as in the ICU as well, that need that little a higher level of care. So COVID has not only an impact on just COVID patients, it has an impact on all different kinds of patients. And that's what we're seeing greatly affecting the hospital. More and more patients are not getting the seeking the care that they need, outpatient or inpatient. And what they're doing is they're coming in at higher levels of acuity, higher levels of sickness, and leading to longer stays of hospitalization. So COVID has a large, large impact in terms of hospital levels of care and the acuity of patients that we're seeing in the hospital. But right now, we're definitely seeing a turnaround in the hospital needs for patients, like I've mentioned, but our ICUs are still greatly impacted and are still greatly affected by this COVID infection, largely from our unvaccinated patients. Now, right. People say that, vaccinations, I can still get it with unvaccinated. Yes, you can still get it. There's never any claims about this. However, all of our patients that are vaccinated in the hospital with COVID do fantastically. They are able to leave out of the hospital very quickly. They don't have any significant severity of diseases. There's no long-term impacts in terms of severe oxygen requirements and other impacts that COVID has left to these patients. So overall, the vaccinations are doing their job, and we're hoping that more and more of this realization of what's going on in the hospital, we'll be able to get more of our local patients vaccinated and hopefully, preventing this further surging.
Dr. Bond, can you give us a sense of what it's like in the emergency department in terms of the volume of folks that are coming in? One thing that I have heard is that there's a significant portion of people who are showing up at emergency rooms who are symptomatic, but don't necessarily need hospitalization. So they're essentially using the emergency room as a testing center, which can't be a particularly good use of resources at a time like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that plug too, since I split my jobs with a few different roles. So yes, I still work as an emergency medicine physician downtown at CRMC, the trauma center in Fresno, but I also run the largest testing and vaccination center in the San Joaquin Valley here with the COVID Equity Project. So I'm here right now talking to you from the vaccine center while we're trying to vaccinate, and we've had a huge surge in testing here. So we certainly have, we're doing 700, 800 tests as an outpatient. And then I go work in the ER, and we have different zones where we triage people based on their acuity. And there is certainly still a large number of people coming into our low acuity tent zones where they have very likely have COVID but aren't going to be hospitalized. They don't feel well, so they're coming into the emergency department, but that they really just need to stay home, stay safe, stay isolated, and come get tested at outpatient and testing centers like ours or through your primary doctors and other places that they can get taken care of. It's really been, from a resource stance, and I'm sure Dr. Campaign will touch on this a little bit, we in the ER have issues where we have a lot of patients being boarded, meaning there's no places to put anybody, and that leads to greater lengths of stay, as well as extended stays for people calling the ambulance for other emergencies unrelated to COVID, where people are staying on the ambulance gurney because there's no place to put them in the emergency department. I work at this center during the weekdays, and this weekend I'll be working in the ER, and then next week I'll still be working in the ICU as well, just covering the COVID ICU. So it's like we're all, as far as it's a staffing issue mostly at this point, less of a ventilator issue, and more of not, there's not enough nurses and doctors to take care of all the COVID patients. So yes, we have a Delta surge. Yes, it's a surging, but two things we can think about is what's the best appropriate way if you have a fever, don't feel well, what we can do, what you should do at that point. We should have some better education on that. But also, of course, as was mentioned earlier, almost all the patients, 88%, I believe, in the hospital right now, and about similarly that are coming through that are COVID positive, are unvaccinated. So despite the discussion of monoclonal antibodies and current treatments and other alternative therapies that are kind of going a little wild right now on the internet, is that the most important thing you can do to protect yourself is honestly is just get vaccinated.
Dr. Campaign, this is a perfect time to bring you into the conversation. As the medical director for American Ambulance, can you talk about the resource issue for local ambulances?
Yes, definitely. And thank you for bringing up that great question. So just like the hospitals are getting hit hard, you know, our ambulance agencies are getting hit hard too. You know, so American Ambulance is a very large ambulance provider for the San Joaquin Valley. And one of the things that happened recently is basically too many people are calling 911 for emergency care, and there's not enough ambulances out there to respond to them. And mostly that's also a staffing issue. And so what's happened is there's a policy that just got put out by the county. It's called Protocol 571, but basically it's an assess and refer policy. So you have abdominal pain, you have something else going on, they come out and assess you and then say you don't meet criteria for an emergent transport. And I think this is a very shocking protocol. So most people in the Valley, when you call 911, you just expect an ambulance to show up and to take you to your hospital of choice. And now, of course, if they assess you and you're hypoxic, meaning your oxygen levels are low or you're not breathing well, there's a big criteria. You know, if you're short of breath, you're having chest pain, of course, they're going to take you. But for the minor injuries, it doesn't mean you don't have a medical emergency, though. You could have appendicitis, right? You can be calling to have abdominal pain and vomiting. But if you meet a certain requirement, they're going to say, okay, but you have to go by private car, or you've got to go by a taxi or get a friend to take you because the system is stretched too thin. Another thing that's happened recently, and very similar to how the East Coast was in their surges, is there's a policy 406, where this is basically when you call 911, this is the EMS agency's way of ensuring that there's ambulances available for high-priority life-threatening emergencies. So if you call 911 for your car accident and you're severely ill or chest pain or shortness of breath, of course the ambulance is going to show up. But if you call and say, you know, I don't feel well, I'm a sick person, or I've got long-term back pain, they're going to put you like in a queue and like a waiting line, and it might be hours before an ambulance comes. And this leaves an available ambulance then to respond to the next car accident or the next medical arrest, a cardiac arrest when your heart stops. So we're kind of trying to do all these things to save ambulances for the most sick person, because a lot of people are calling the ambulance who either just feel really sick because COVID does make you feel bad, but they might not need an emergent transport. And I think that's a change in our American way of thinking, right? We mostly think if we call 911, an ambulance should show up and take us to the hospital. But once again, this is a precious resource. And I think as a community, we need to save this resource for the most sick people. And just like the other physician spoke from Kaiser and from Sierra View about human capital and resources. Our resources in the agency at American Ambulance are stretched thin too, because we have people getting sick, people with COVID themselves. I feel like the EMS system is really the unsung heroes of this COVID pandemic. You know, they go into people's homes with COVID. They're sitting in a small back of an ambulance with them while they transport them long distances. And they've been out there just like all of us on the front lines for the past 2 years doing this. And right now we're short on paramedics, we're short on EMTs, we're short on people. There's enough physical ambulance to drive. There's not enough people to staff them. And so due to this, the county EMS system has put out these two policies to kind of help decrease the burden of the EMS on the hospitals and not transporting the people and saving it for the people who need it the most.
Dr. Bond, I'd like to circle back to you quickly. As the director of the UCSF Fresno COVID Equity Project, you are out there working to increase access to vaccines. How is that work going? And what are you hearing from people about what is motivating them to finally take that step to get vaccinated?
Well, thanks for that question. So we've definitely seen a big ebb and flow in vaccines where when we started, we could not get enough vaccines. We had lines and lines and miles to get vaccinated. We have everyone trying to get their vaccines. Then, of course, we sort of got the people who are really eager to get it. And then we have this large group of essentially vaccine hesitant and at some point vaccine resistant or anti-vax group as well that is difficult to break into. We still have a large group where there's an access issue. We run 30 to 45 mobile events and target certain communities, those with low access to healthcare within the region, and communities of color, in particular with migrant farm workers and African-American populations, where you look at some of the clinics, they're not as spread as well distributed through those areas. And so there's some hesitation in that. And a lot of it is just misinformation, I have to say. There's a lot of concerns over pregnancy and health, and there's so much Facebook doctoring going on and scare tactics that there's just a lot of scared people. And getting trust in the medical community is difficult. Some of these, we do have to understand that some of these groups have historically not been treated great by society, the government, and the medical community as well. So we have to recognize that to earn trust back, to make sure that they know that this is their best option. This is the way to keep them the safest. We get so many questions about, like, you know, pregnancy being a most common one, where people are, young females have very low rates of uptake because they're scared about getting pregnant. And they know that there's actually greater risk from losing a pregnancy from getting COVID and being unvaccinated than there ever is a foreseeable potential risk, which doesn't exist really for pregnancy in the setting of a COVID vaccination. So there's just a lot of work we have to do on that. But there's unfortunately forces that are trying to counter us at that. You're asking about the flow currently, and we basically did have an uptick in about a couple weeks ago, last month, when mandates started coming around with both testing mandates that you or vaccine mandates where you had to get vaccinated or had to get vaccinated or get testing. It both took an increase in testing amounts as well as vaccinations, and I do think the Delta surge that has happened in the region and nationally has honestly scared some people that thought they were, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm safe, into getting vaccinated. So we are back essentially into a little bit of an upswing, which is, it's unfortunate that you have to, you know, see some family member get sick of COVID or something like that or have a workplace require it. But we do have certainly an uptick in vaccinations in the last couple of weeks.
Well, that is encouraging news, at least. I've been talking with Dr. Kenny Bond with UCSF Fresno, Dr. Robert Ferdman with Kaiser Permanente Fresno, Donna Hefner with Sierra View Medical Center, and Danielle Campaign with American Ambulance. Thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.